Anchorage, I'm pleased to welcome the journalist, broadcaster, and corporate communications consultant, Gary Bannerman. From 1973 to 1988, he hosted the top current affairs program on radio station CKNW. As a journalist, he broadcast from behind bars, where on three separate occasions he negotiated violent hostage-taking incidents. He also covered the 1973 Middle East War and won praise and accolades for his legendary consumer and criminal reporting. Born in Nova Scotia, he moved to British Columbia in 1970, where he wrote for the province. Since, he's observed the politics of British Columbia, often participating himself. With his wife Patricia, he currently runs Bannerline Enterprises. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca Gary Bannerman. Good morning, Mr. Bannerman.
Joe, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. One of the things that I said to you in the email about asking you to appear was that, you know, you may not be in broadcasting daily, but you still have opinions about what's going on politically, so it would be fun to hear your perspective. Talk to me about, first of all, we'll get into the election, the provincial election in just a sec, but do you think a federal election is in the offing anytime soon?
I think it could probably happen any day that Stephen Harper and Paul Martin want it to happen. And I'm not too sure either one of them do. Paul Martin certainly is bargaining to keep his government alive as long as possible. I'm not too sure whether very many of the conservative members really want an election at this stage. I think they feel they have to push for it. But you have to remember with these people in Ottawa that for 90% of them, it's the finest job they've ever had in their life. They will likely never have a job as good again. They're virtually unemployable, most of them. And in fact, they fight to keep the perks and benefits of the position. So, I don't think there's too many people in Parliament that want an election right now. There may not be anybody in Parliament that wants an election right now. And it's quite funny to watch. It's almost a divine comedy as they pretend they're out there ready to go to the people at a moment's notice.
Were an election held, though, do you think that this would be Harper's to win and a majority government for him? Or
I think it would be at least a minority government for the Conservative Party. Corruption within the Liberal Party, the Quebec branch, even though I don't think anybody deep down believes Paul Martin had much or anything to do with it, the corruption is so overwhelming that I think that not enough voters will hold their nose and vote Liberal because of it. It's just too disgusting. And the difficulty the Conservative Party has is it's not unlike the difficulty historically the Conservative Party have always had, that they are torn apart by the extreme right wing. And the extreme right wing of the Conservative Party now are the hardline reformers that were part of the merger. Back in the days of the, before Brian Mulroney in the Progressive Conservative Party days, there were some right wingers led by prominent MPs like Tom Cossett and others who were the extreme right wing. They constantly pull the party down. And therefore the party fights every election scared to death that some bonehead somewhere is going to say some outrageously right-wing comment that's going to swing the tide of the election. That will probably happen this time too, because they have some very strange people. The parallel actually is the NDP. The curse of the NDP over the years has been their extreme left wing. That's why it is a comfortable middle road for the Liberal Party. They simply find that easy territory with neither extreme haunting them within their own party, and they go straight ahead.
About the provincial election, you sent me that piece that you wrote about Gordon Campbell, and
right.
I quite enjoyed it. Now imagine, if you will, in 1985 at that lunch that you had with Gordon Campbell, if he took your advice and decided not to run for the mayoralty of Vancouver,
right,
and went back to play t-ball with his son. What do you think would have happened then?
Well, my advice was not in for the benefit of your listeners. May I say that Gordon was a friend. He was a very prominent member of city council. Most people thought he was destined to be the mayor. But there was a tide running in favor of the cagey old veteran Harry Rankin. Everybody kind of loved him. Even the people who didn't like his political philosophy thought that, you know, he had earned it. And my fear was that Gordon was going to run prematurely for the mayoralty and lose, in which case, who knows where he would go. But he at that lunch, I advised him not to abandon while as an alderman, and that he would hate it if he was a council member and Harry Rankin was the mayor. That's what he said. He'd rather go play t-ball with his young boy. But nevertheless, he went ahead and ran, and he won, and the rest is history.
Now, you titled that piece "The Enigma of Gordon Campbell,"
yes.
And he's not very popular with very many people. I mean, he's not easy to warm up to, is he not?
No, it's very odd. The people who know him well like him very much, and there have been periods in my relationship with Gordon that we've been relatively close. And he's a very likable fellow, as is Nancy and the family, and he's very sincere. But he knows it himself. There is some enormous gap in the warmth department between the way he relates with people. Now, I think he's better at it now. But he himself was very concerned about it, and it probably was a factor as to why he lost the first provincial election. He ran as leader of the Liberal Party. But even today, if you look at the polls, is that women tend to distrust him. That his personal popularity is very often less than the government that he operates. And I think he's somewhat hoist on his own petard. He is so centralized in his thinking and so methodical and so strategic in almost everything he does that he gives off this feeling that he's somewhat of a machine that's been designed to perform a purpose rather than somebody with blood going through their veins.
Right. Are there any similarities to a premier that you covered well, Bill Bennett?
No. No, only in... Bill Bennett was an incredibly passionate man. I mean, he was tough as nails and absolutely determined and not calculating. Is that Bill basically knew the right thing to do, and he went ahead and did, and if he didn't like it, he'd be happy to go do something else in his life. He was as dynamic as can be. I think there's philosophical, economic parallels between the two of them and the way they view the economy. But Gordon is incredibly methodical. Very few people who are front-row politicians out front in the public are as much of a strategist as Gordon Campbell is. I think that's really what he loves doing best. He just loves sitting around in the room with three or four people that he trusts and plotting a strategy for something that may not happen for 3 or 4 years. You know, while the rest of the people are wondering where they're going to go for lunch, Gordon is thinking about what's going to happen in 2009. And I think that's both his strength and his one of his liabilities, is that nobody relates what he's saying today to what they think he's thinking.
What do you make of his campaign? One of the papers called it a campaign in a bubble. Do you think that that's...
No, I don't. I actually think their campaign is terrific. I think they were in very deep trouble 2 months ago. I somehow or other, they were not... I don't think they were in any danger of losing government, but they certainly were in danger of losing 30 or more seats in the legislature.
Really?
Well, he lost, the best and brightest in his cabinet. You think about it. Gary Collins, Jeff Plant, Christy Clark, all going off in other directions. Very, very, a great deal of unhappiness within the Liberal caucus. Many of the MLAs feeling that nobody ever listened to them, that every decision was happening in the Premier's office, that the Cabinet was being ignored on most things. There was just real discomfort in the Liberal ranks. So I think they were in difficulty. But, that is very typical of Gordon, is that I suspect during the height of that period where there seemed to be such a distance between Gordon and the rest of the party, he was in there doing as usual, plotting the strategy, planning the campaign, seeing how the economic numbers were coming. Despite at the lowest ebb, as I viewed where they were going, I was flabbergasted because, in fact, it's been almost an economic miracle what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years in British Columbia, how bad and seriously we were in trouble before the change of government, and how good things are now. Not entirely attributable to the government, but certainly they can take the lion's share of the credit for a strategy that they told us they were going to do. They went ahead and did it. They predicted what the results would be if they did this plan. And the results are exactly, as they forecast. So that's why I was so stunned. I mean, here was a party that had performed an economic miracle, or at least had been the driver of the bus while an economic miracle occurred. And here they are today, in such a mess 2 months ago. But that's not the case today. I think they're in great, great shape. And while they'll lose some seats at this juncture, unless something dramatic happens in the next 3 weeks, at this juncture, I think that they'll lose fewer than 20 seats. And that's a very strong majority for British Columbia.
I talked to the NDP candidate in my riding, David Chudnovsky, a few moments ago, and you know, he rattled off the list of so-called broken promises. Is that just typical left-wing NDP bleeding, do you think?
No, but the kind of areas where one would cite broken promises, the most obvious one would be residential, seniors' residence and housing. But, you know, the typical area when you look to find fault in the other political party, you aim at their generalities. When they say, we're going to make health the number one priority, and then you find areas where it looks like it's the number two or the number three, or you focus on cutbacks that seem to contradict it. If you pick up the Liberal manifesto at the last election that the voters had to say, here are all the things we say we're going to do, I suspect you'll find that they did 90% of them. And 10%, they didn't make it. And in some things, they contradicted themselves, for sure. Some of the things they promised were just plain dumb. And I'm glad they contradicted themselves. You know, W.A.C. Pettit used to do that. His famous phrase was, we'll take a second look at it.
How about Carol James? What do you make of her efforts as leader of the NDP? Has she done well in this campaign thus far?
I like Carol James. I think she's a very pleasant person. She's sincere. I don't know that she's got the substance at this stage to be premier, someone who has never had a seat in the British Columbia legislature. That's a very big jump from never being there to being premier. I don't know that she has the credibility because of that lack of leadership experience, but I think she's a first-class interim leader. If, in fact, they're ever going to come to power, the new leader could be Carol James after she gets elected and has some experience, but I would tend to think that they're going to have to find a star somewhere, and a star that goes and earns their popularity in public and wins public trust and then leads the team into battle. I don't think it's going to be Carol James, but it may well be. So I think she's very credible. She's not going to hurt them. That's really important in politics. Is she's not going to do them any damage. She's going to make a lot of friends for the party. She's going to heal a lot of old wounds. She's going to help create some distance from the ugly stories of the Fast Ferries and Bingo Gate and some of those other things of the former government.
Adrienne Carr, the Green Party, do you think that she's been a welcome presence on the political scene?
I think the Green Party's a welcome presence, and I like Adrienne Carr. The message that they present is a very good message. Whether it will result in one or more seats, I don't know. But I think it would be awfully good for British Columbia if the Green Party had two or three seats in the provincial legislature.
Are there any similarities for this campaign to ones in the past? Do you think from like 72 on? Do you think there have been?
No, it's an election fought without a crisis of any kind. Everything is extremely positive on the horizon. I can't remember an election with less at stake.
Really?
Going back, I think going back to 1975, the election in 1975 when the Socreds and Bill Bennett came back to power, things were very chaotic in the NDP. Although that 3-year government of Dave Barrett did some of the most remarkable achievements, I think, in British Columbia history. Their weakness was they did too much too fast, and they never had the management and administration systems in place to look after things like the agriculture land freeze, ICBC, and just a whole number of innovative things that they did in government. They just did it almost like kids in a candy store. But in 75, it was a mess. And then there was an economic mess in 1981 as totally out of the control of the government. The entire economy collapsed. We were in 22% interest rate across the country. It was devastating. So there was lots at stake. So there might well have been a clear left-wing versus right-wing political battle, but there was a tremendous amount at stake. There isn't really much fueling the emotions this time around.
And it's a foregone conclusion that Campbell will win. There'll be a healthy NDP opposition. position?
Yes, I guess the only thing in doubt is how healthy will the NDP opposition be. At the rate they're going in this campaign, I think they're going backwards. I think 2 months ago they had a chance at 30 or more seats. Now they're going to be really, really hard-pressed to get 20, who knows, 3 weeks from now.
The STV referendum, it's extraordinary, I think, in the sense that it is quite remarkable how we're able to have the ability to change our government, our system of government. Where are you on the STV referendum? Will you be voting yes or no?
Oh, I'll vote no.
Really?
That also goes back a long way in BC history. You know, when W.A.C. Bennett was the ultimate maverick, a conservative who had grown uncomfortable with the Conservative Party, he was a great supporter of the single transferable ballot. In fact, he never would have formed government were it not for coalition and winning people and bringing people around. He never quite got the single transferable ballot, but they sure argued for it. And then after he formed the government, that was the first thing he abandoned. Now, I'm against it. I think you elect people to govern, and period, and let them go and do it. The single transferable ballot virtually guarantees that there'll never be a majority government, and we'd be constantly doing what's going on in Ottawa right now. You know, nobody thinking about what on earth makes good government. They're all wondering, you know, how to keep these neat jobs they've got and pretend they're caring for the Canadian public.
The Citizens' Assembly, though, do you think that they should have... I mean, do you think that the first-past-the-post system is good?
Well, I think it's got its flaws, but I think it's better than it's better than the alternative. The alternative is too chaotic. You can't really get good local representation. A country I know something about, Israel, for example. Each of the major parties put forward, if there's 110 seats in the Knesset, I'm not sure the current count, but they put forward a full slate of candidates. And if they get 40% of the vote, nobody ever does, but if they get 40% of the vote, 40 of the candidates on their list, the top 40, they have to number them from 1 to 110, the top 40 get elected. There's absolutely no regional. They could all come from within three blocks of each other in Jerusalem. It doesn't happen that way, but it could, technically. There's no protection to see that each area of the country, and it's a tiny little country. Sometimes it seems that it's smaller than Surrey, but it's a small country. But nevertheless, there's whole areas and whole ethnic groups that don't have any representation at all. So that's not what I like the Citizens Assembly, by the way. I think Gordon Gibson, the whole bunch of them, did a great job at very healthy to discuss these kind of things. The BC approach is going to be larger regional chunks within which, the top number of candidates will get elected according to popular vote. But first of all, the whole debate is rather academic because it hasn't got a ghost of chance in passing. Nobody has a clue what it is, and very few people are going to take time to learn. So I don't think we'll ever see it.
I was going to ask that. Do you think the threshold was too high, or is it just that people aren't learning about it?
People don't care that much.
It's Rafe Mayer, probably, right?
Well, I think any of us, including me, any of us that love politics as a sport and participate in it over the years, love this stuff. But that's a pretty narrow group of junkies. The mass public that have got bigger concerns, like how the kids are doing in school, aren't going to take a lot of time to worry about that.
One of the things we talked about in the emails back and forth was the state of radio and broadcasting today. As I said, we brought you on because we want to hear you again and listen to what you have to say. What do you make of the state of talk radio in Vancouver, in the province? What do you think of your successors at 600, Rafe Mayer and Bill Good at CKNW?
Well, I have a good regard for both of them. I've had lunch with Rafe a couple of times in the last few months, and it's fun listening to him. He's tremendously entertaining, and Rafe, of course, is the real McCoy when you talk about a passionate, open line host. Bill is a different ball of wax entirely. I mean, Bill is a quality anchorman, presenter in the British sense, very, very reputable host, a good guy. And then you could look at Philip Till, who's a world-class newsman with a tremendous pedigree behind him, and talent on talk radio. But the problem is not the hosts. The problem is the ownership of media today. It's run by accountants and systems. It's got everything to do with shareholder value, with sticking five radio stations under one roof, with pretending to be different, pretending to care about the community, when in fact the owners are rarely sure of what community it is that they're broadcasting in. There's no support. None of these open line shows have proper reporting. You never pick up the newspaper and get the sense that these radio shows are setting the agenda for British Columbia debate anymore. Rafe does it to some extent, but the fact is that for many, many years, between Jack Webster and I, we had 80% of the sets in use.
And that's amazing.
And a very, very big part of the daily news, whether you read it in the newspaper or saw it on television, evolved through these radio programs. Not just because of the host, but because the ownership and the management stood behind the programs and advertised the programs, promoted the programs, provided the reporting backup they needed to do the sort of research to bring the news in front of the public and to create an extended family of 2,000 or 3,000 contacts who were indirectly part of the program, each of whom could be phoned on a moment's notice to give the real story behind any issue. None of the shows do that anymore. They're basically just placid forums for the host and the guests and the callers to express their opinions. And in that sense, I don't think they make as much of a contribution as we used to be able to do.
And is that what turns you off from going back into broadcasting?
Well, yeah, you know, that for years I used to get all sorts of interesting offers in the run of a year. I don't get the offers anymore because I'm so totally out of the loop. But each time I've had the offers, I guess they've all been told no so often. Each time I've come back and said that if, in fact, we could put the right kind of a team and business plan together around the program to relate to a modern market, and get back to what talk radio once was, I'd be thrilled to be part of it, and I wouldn't be very demanding in terms of my own personal benefits. You know, I would really want to invest the energy in creating the product. But nobody wants to do that. I mean, good heavens, the executives that you talk to at any radio station these days aren't sure they're going to be around in 3 months. In fact, they aren't even sure who's going to own the radio station in 3 months. There's been so much change. There may well be investment in shares and in hardware and technology and radio licenses, but there's absolutely no investment going on into how to best serve the community.
And Bannerline Enterprises, would you talk about that? And you're having fun doing that, I assume?
Oh, well, my company is 30 years old. As a corporate consulting firm, beginning in 1989, I basically started doing a large number of projects for corporate clients, and just a vast range of corporate clients, a few of whom have been with me for a very long time, but most of it is one project at a time. It could be anything from coffee table books to corporate videos or a business plan or a marketing plan or a strategic plan for some enterprise. Very much behind the scenes. I have a team of 20 or 25 associates that I work with some regularity, different people on different jobs. I bring together the very best expertise I can find to serve a client's interest on a given communications project. And it's extremely interesting. You know, just there's never a dull moment, and no two projects are alike.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for doing this and for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure meeting you, and good luck in your endeavors.
Thanks very much. Gary Bannerman has been my guest. Check out his website for Bannerline Enterprises, bannerline.net, for the commentary. I'm Joseph Plunham.